excited to give this exhortation as well, because it's one of those rare exhortations that kind of strike you in a way where it slowly starts to consume your mind, and you just kind of have to get it down on paper because it's all you seem to be thinking about, and that rarely ever happens. So this one, when I wrote it, just kind of all came out. Didn't take much effort on my part at all, which was nice. And you'll see why in a minute, why it was so easy. It's because I'm speaking about something that I do enjoy and love very much, and that is mountain biking, that Brother James mentioned as well. So if you'll bear with me for a second, I'm going to grab it. Yeah, I wish I could. Can we slide this back a little bit? That'll work. I hope you guys can see that. I love this mountain bike. This mountain bike was my 40th birthday party present to myself. But that actually didn't come out quite right. The only way I could make it happen was that for my 40th birthday party, I had a big party and everybody came, and I said, I only want one gift, and that is I'm really trying to purchase a new mountain bike for myself. And so everybody came and actually donated and helped. So I really couldn't have done it by myself. It took everybody's help to help me to be able to achieve this. So I was really excited about it and very, very happy. And when I was shopping for this bike and looking for it, you know, which one I wanted, and going online, and when I saw this bike, I literally got chills. I was like, that's the one. It just spoke to me. To me, this bike is actually like a piece of art. It's just beautiful. And what it does for me is it kind of helps bring me closer to God when I'm out on the mountain bike, you know, on the trail, and I'm riding in the mountains and all of his creation. It brings me closer to my friends, because I do ride with people that I know and love. And we get to just have time out there alone and separate from the world a little bit. And we're chatting and talking as we're, you know, achieving these mountains and riding around. And that's our purpose today, isn't it? My purpose today is to kind of help bring all of us closer to God through the words of exhortation. And to remember Christ, the sacrifice that he made for us so that we can have a chance of eternal life. And I want you to leave here and not forget my exhortation. So one of the reasons why I brought the bike was also to help in that endeavor as well, so that every time you see a bike or you see someone on a bike, you think, oh yeah, it reminds me of Josh's exhortation that he gave, and helping us to change our perspective a little bit. I want it to serve as a memory trigger. So I have two goals this morning. My first goal is to try to draw from a mountain bike as many lessons as we can, some spiritual lessons. And each one of those lessons, as we go through, you'll see, could almost be an exhortation in and of themselves. So that's my first goal. And then when we're totally exhausted from trying to think of all those things, the last thing I want to do, my second goal, is just to leave you with one takeaway, just one thing for you to remember when you leave here and to keep in mind. And that is for us to be able to change our perspective. So let's begin. When I was looking at the bike, or we look at the mountain bike here, I want us to not only see the physical object for what it is, but for what it can represent and the symbolism that it can have for us. I want it to represent the ecclesia. All right, so let's change our perspective and think of this bike as the ecclesia. Now, if you'll remember the very first thing I was telling you about when I was talking about this bike, I said, I love this bike. Well, I love my ecclesia. And this bike brings me closer to God, closer to my friends. Well, that's what the ecclesia does as well, isn't it? Ecclesia brings us closer to God and closer to each other. And that's really important. It's a beautiful work of art. Our ecclesia is a beautiful work of art, set up for us from the beginning of time, when Christ came and was creating ecclesias and brotherhoods that were getting together and spending time. Well, that's what this represents. And obviously a bike is made up of a lot of different parts. We have, you know, just a huge amount of parts. I'm going to come over here for a little bit. All right. So if the bike has all these different parts, and we as the ecclesia are made up of many different parts, then we know that some of us are the tires. Some of us are those who know what to do when the rubber meets the road, so to speak, right? Make a pun there. They keep us on track. And they are the grip and the traction of the ecclesia. Does that make you think of anybody? Some of us are the spokes. There's lots of us who are spokes. So we're the ones that are supporting not only those who are doing all the hard work, keeping us on track and keeping us moving forward, but they're supporting everybody else as well. They're supporting the frame and the seat and everybody. So we have a lot of spokes in the ecclesia as well. One of my favorites is the bearings. You don't see bearings, do you? All right? But let me show you something. Bearings are amazing. Like, we don't hear anything. You don't see anything. But that tire will just roll and roll and roll and roll and roll. Right? It'll take a long, long time for that to slow down and eventually stop. And in fact, bearings can be so good that the weight difference of having your little spot where you input your air is heavier just a little bit than everything else, and eventually it'll settle on the bottom because the bearings are so smooth that allow it to do that. Well, who are the bearings in your ecclesia? The bearings are those people that you never hear, you hardly ever see, but they sure make everything run smoothly, don't they? And we all got a really good picture of that last year when we had Idyllwild here, didn't we? As far as I'm concerned, that was an amazing week in the sense that that's when the bearings really shined and really did an amazing job, because we had people here from all over the world all week long, and there was never a glitch. There was never a problem. The whole hall was torn down and set up every day. We had all the food in the back, and it was all provided for and taken care of, and it seemed like it was just running super smooth. And that's what the bearings do. They make sure that everything is running really smooth. There's never a problem. I can't imagine riding without bearings. It would be a ton of work, wouldn't it? You know, we have people who are the pedals, people who are the seat, the handlebars. You know, your mind can go crazy thinking of all the different things. And what happens if you lose a part of that bike? You know, we just miss one piece. It doesn't work. Hardly ever will it work if you're missing one piece. Can you think of anything you can do without? Can I do without a tire? I mean, I could ride with one pedal. I could. But it would increase my workload immensely. I would go half as fast, and I'd be working twice as hard. But we could. We could muddle through and do it. I could ride with no chain, technically. Right, I would look really weird going uphill with my feet on the ground, kind of trying to push myself up, or walking the bike. And the only time it would work is to be going downhill. That's the only time. So if we think about that a little bit, only when things are smooth and working well would we work well. But the minute we started hitting a hill or some kind of difficulty in the ecclesia, everything would fall apart because we don't have a chain. We don't have any way to transfer that energy. We could go without a seat, technically, but I don't want to do that. Because especially when you're mountain bike riding, you spend the majority of your time in the saddle, is what they call it, right? We're sitting in that saddle. It's taking all the weight. The minute you get out of your seat, every part of your body is engaged, and it quickly exhausts your body, because now your whole body is engaged, your legs, your back, your lungs. You're out of your seat, you're moving, and it's way more cardio. So you want to be in your seat, even when you're climbing up a hill. Most of the time, you're going to be sitting in that seat. So to do without it would drastically reduce the efficiency and effectiveness of the bike. In the same way that if we miss one person, it drastically reduces the effectiveness of the ecclesia. It can have a powerful effect. And I mean, we could go on and on. We could talk about all the other parts that are important. But there's one element that's missing from this bike, actually. And it's the most important piece of all. And that's me. I'm missing from the bike. Without me, the bike doesn't move at all. It just sits here, looking amazing. Right? I can't stand next to it because it won't work if I just stand here with it. I can't tell it to do something, so I can't give it commands. Go ride, because nothing works. So it requires that I participate with it. So I'm a part of the bike. I have to get on the bike. I have to work with it. I have to pedal. I have to exert energy and force. And that's our part in our ecclesia, isn't it? I can't just be aloof from the ecclesia and apart from it and then tell it what to do and it does it. I can't be in the ecclesia, you know, next to it and expect it to work. I have to be on it. I have to work with the ecclesia. We're a team. We work together. And only when we work together can we achieve things. And that's when things run smoothly and we're effective. All right, everybody's imagination. Are you thinking about who you are? What part of the bike are you? What part of the ecclesia? Because we all are a piece. So let's broaden our scope a little bit. And now we can talk about mountain bike riding and some of the lessons we can learn just from that. And let's see what that represents as well. What does mountain bike riding represent as our walk in the truth in our spiritual life? Well, let me start by saying, and this goes for everybody that rides a mountain bike, I never ride as much as I want or I should. And that in and of itself is the hardest obstacle to overcome. We never get to ride as much as we would like to. Life gets in the way. We have responsibilities at work. We have responsibilities at home. We struggle with our own shortcomings, our laziness. And it's just really hard to get out on the trail. So what does that represent? Well, if that's our spiritual life, I know exactly what that means. I don't do enough spiritually. I just don't do enough as I should or as enough as I want. I don't do it as often as I want. Maybe I don't pray as much as I could or should, or maybe we don't do the readings every night as much as we, you know, as we should be, as consistent as we should be. Well, we're hampered, aren't we, by responsibilities, by our own personal shortcomings. But when we do ride, we're kind of renewed and remotivated. And it seems like every time we get off the trail, we're like, oh, that was great. Let's not wait so long before we do that again. In the same way that our spiritual life is when we do things, we're kind of renewed and re-energized, even though it takes effort and it's hard work. And it made me think of Matthew chapter 13, verses 20 to 22, when we talk about the seed. But he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the world, immediately he stumbles. Now he who received seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. So in that sense, when we hear God's word, we're kind of energized and we're excited, but then the weeds come and it kind of chokes us a little bit, and we start to stumble and fall a little bit. You know, we need to continually be refreshed because we're like those leaky vessels. We can't seem to, you know, keep going without being always re-energized and always re-motivated. So how do we do that? Well, we do it through reading of God's words, through coming to a meeting, through going to CYC conferences or Bible schools. Those are the times in our lives when we can get re-energized and motivated and rededicating our lives to God. And what about those times when you don't feel like writing? And I know that we all have those times as well. Maybe you don't feel like doing anything. You want to take a break. Well, sometimes it takes another rider to kind of call you and call you out and push you a little bit and say, you haven't ridden in a long time. When are we going to go out and ride? You know, it takes another riding buddy to kind of push, and somebody who's going to, you know, get you out of your little comfort zone or maybe out of your slump a little bit. And that's a lesson for us as well, isn't it? To kind of push each other a little in support of each other, to kind of get each other to do things. And that requires us as well putting in some effort, giving them a call, going and spending time with someone, inviting them to a social event. You know, we see that they're not attending or not coming. And let's talk about the trail. You know, riding a trail is not easy. It's not supposed to be. Trails are hard work. Some sections are narrow and rocky. They're really technical. Those could be times when we're struggling, challenging our faith, our beliefs. We're having a hard time accomplishing those goals, and we're you know, having to put our feet down or rest. Some sections of our lives are like fire roads. You know, they're uphill, but they're a lot more easy. They're kind of graded, and it's not as steep, so it's just a real gradual climb. And those are times when, yeah, we're pushing through. We're having a hard time, but we're getting there. You know, we'll make it to the top, and we're doing all right. There's other times when we're going downhill. Well, those are the great times, right? We're just cruising. Everything's going fantastic, and we seem to be on top of our game. But what's interesting is even when we're going downhill, you definitely still need to keep your hands on the handlebars, right? You can't ever just relax. You can't let go and just float. Because the minute you aren't concentrating on what you're doing, you're headed for immediate disaster. And things can get out of control really quickly. So what happens when we get to the top of the mountain? You get to the top of the hill. Do we just stop and kick back and say, "All right, I made it"? No, we can't ever say that. And what we do when we're out on the trails is we do what we call extra credit. So that's when you turn around and you go back down and you go to the last guy in your group that's still struggling to get up the hill. He's the guy that you go down, back down to, and you turn around and you start riding up with him. Well, why do we do that? It's because we want to support everybody in the group. So you want to go down to that very last guy and bring him up with you, because who wants to ride by themselves? Especially when you're mountain biking, it's very mental. And if you're the last guy in the group and you're struggling to get up to the top of the hill, you start to kind of crumble mentally a little bit. Like, maybe I shouldn't be riding with these guys. You know, they're so much better than I am. Or you start having all kinds of doubts about your fitness or whatever. But when a guy comes back down and rides with you, yeah, maybe, you know, he's bragging a little bit because he's like, "Yeah, I've already made it to the top, so here I am coming down to get you." But he's also doing you a favor. He's coming down to, you know, get you out of your mental space a little bit, talk to you, and say, "You're almost there. Just push a little harder. It's just right around the next corner. You're doing great." You know, those are great things, because those are things that we can apply in our lives as well, to kind of look around to see who's lagging behind, who's falling back, or who's falling away from the ecclesia, and then to go get them and support them. "You're doing great. You're almost there. You know, hang in there. Let's do this together. Let's finish strong." Those are the things we want to do for each other. And how can we talk about mountain bike riding and not talk about all the equipment that we need to bring along? And there's lots of equipment that you need to have. Helmets, arm pads, leg pads, gloves, special shoes. We have all kinds of gear so that when we crash, we're protected and we're able to kind of get up and keep going. And that made me think of, obviously, Ephesians chapter 6. So I'll read to you just verses 13 to 17. "Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you've done everything, to stand. Stand firm, then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with a breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God." And just like we're supposed to have our armor on in the world, we're supposed to have our armor on when we're out there mountain bike riding. And that's a great lesson. The similarity is just so perfect, isn't it? We have to be protected, because to ride without it is craziness. I've seen so many friends, and myself included, going down in a blaze of glory on the trail. If I had not had that gear on, I would have been in bad shape. But I'm able to just get up and kind of brush off the dust and keep going. to do without the right gear and without the protection that we need is really crazy. Sometimes I see people on the street, you know, riding around my house, and they've got, you know, no helmet on, and they've got their, you know, headphones in, and they're just blasting their music. And I just look at them and just shake my head because they're just flirting with death. I mean, they have no chance at all if something were to happen. In the same way that if we don't put on our armor in the truth, if something were to happen, we wouldn't stand a chance. And we need to be protected and keep ourselves protected from the world around us. And I could go on and on. I could talk all morning about, you know, coming prepared to the ride. What would that symbolize? We could talk about the importance of riding on a regular basis. What does that symbolize? How about the mental aspect of riding? You know, being able to push yourself harder and farther than you think you can. You know, our spiritual lives are so similar in a lot of different ways. You know, and it doesn't even have to be about mountain biking at all. It could be anything. Because really, what we need to do is to look differently at the world around us, to draw spiritual lessons from the things that are happening in our lives. We need to change our perspective. And that's the one thing I want you to remember today, is just change your perspective. Because if we don't, how are we different than the world around us? I brought along with me some glasses. This is another tool that I use when we're mountain bike riding. And these glasses are really great. They're specifically designed for mountain bike riding. They have little vents in the sides there so that they don't get fogged up when you're riding in the morning. But they do a great job of changing my perspective when I'm riding. Because in the morning, when it's early morning and the sun isn't completely out, these, because of the color of the lens, they brighten up the trail. They take that existing light and they make it a little bit brighter. At least it looks a little bit brighter. And then when the sun is fully out, it kind of makes sure that it's not too bright. I mean, they're not like transition lenses. They don't change color or darken or brighten. Oh, they do? Oh, they do a little bit? Oh, that's cool. So Nate tells me they do. They're even better than I thought. They don't let as much light in so that the trail nothing gets too bright so that I can't see. And then the same thing when it's dusk, which is the hardest time to ride for me, is when the sun is setting. That's when I struggle the most. But these things really save you because they take the existing light and they make it brighter than what it is, which is really an amazing thing. So they help me to see things differently when they're on as opposed to when they're off. And that's a great lesson for us as well, to again help us to change our perspective, to see things differently in the world around us. And that's exactly what Christ was doing in his ministry, was constantly trying to get people to change the way they saw things. For example, in Matthew 13:44, Christ says, "The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field." Well, he paints a literal picture for us, doesn't he? And we see it in our mind's eye. A man goes to this field and finds this treasure and gets really excited. But that's not what it's about. It's not the literal, it's the picture that it's the symbology of it, what it represents. It represents the truth, the gospel. And when you find it, he's excited about it. And he'll do whatever it takes to obtain it. And again, in Luke 15, suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." Well, you know, this story is a little bit more odd in the sense that, you know, here we're painting a picture again of this actual event taking place where a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one and goes crazy searching for the one. Well, and then, you know, when she does find it, you know, has a big party over one lost coin. And I'm sure people are kind of scratching their heads a little bit. But he explains it to them in the very next verse. He says, "In the same way I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." And trying to show them that it's, you know, you are important. Nobody is expendable. Christ used everyday objects and events to kind of create lessons for the people of the time and for us to learn from. He had a unique perspective on the everyday. And that's what our goal should be. Our goal should be the same thing, to kind of have a unique perspective on what's happening around us. To not see the world for what it is, but for what it can represent to us. and what we can learn from it, to try to draw those spiritual lessons. And I have a little short story here that I found. I want to just read it with you. It's a conversation between an individual and God, and it kind of went along with this whole idea of changing your perspective. So it starts off with, let's say, me asking God a question. God, can I ask you a question? Sure. Promise you won't get mad? I promise. Why did you let so much stuff happen to me today? What do you mean? Well, I woke up late. Yes. My car took forever to start. Okay. At lunch, they made my sandwich wrong, and I had to wait for them to make another. On the way home, my phone went dead just as I picked up a call. And on top of it all, when I got home, I just wanted to soak my feet in a new foot massager and relax, but it wouldn't work. Nothing went right today. Why did you do that? And the response is, let me see. The angel of death was at your bed this morning, and I had to send one of my angels to battle him for your life. I let you sleep through that. I didn't let your car start because there was a drunk driver on your route that would have hit you if you were on the road. The first person who made your sandwich today was sick. I didn't want you to catch what they have. I knew you couldn't afford to miss work. Your phone went dead because the person that was calling was going to give false witness about what you said on that call. I didn't even let you talk to them so you would be covered. Oh, and that foot massager, it had a shortage that was going to throw out all the power in your house tonight. I didn't think you wanted to be left in the dark. Oh, I'm sorry, God. Don't be sorry. Just learn to trust me in all things, the good and the bad. And don't doubt that my plan for your day is always better than your plan. And that's kind of the lesson for us as well, isn't it? That we can sometimes get so wrapped up in ourselves and what we think is going on that we kind of lose perspective a little. And we don't understand that God is actually working in our lives. And so that's what I want us to do this morning, brothers and sisters, is to change our perspective, to look through the world through Christ-like glasses, and to have that vision, to see godly lessons in everything that happens to us, from hard and difficult times when we're weak and beaten down to the happy and blessed times when things are going well. And all things should remind us of God and his coming kingdom, because that's our goal. Our goal is to live forever serving our Heavenly Father and his kingdom. And he's given us the tools to do that. The ecclesia is here for us to help us, to encourage us, to work with us. He's given us the ability to change our perspective, and see him in all that we do. And he's given us his son, who we're here to remember this morning. And again, it goes right back to that symbolism, doesn't it? The bread here is physical bread, but it represents his body. And the wine is physical liquid, but it represents his blood. Christ was that perfect example who was able to change his perspective and see God working in his life, just as God is always working in ours.